Good afternoon, Justice Herndon. Can you hear me?
I can, yeah. Can you hear me?
Hey, I
Can you
saw
hear
that you
me?
spoke, but my sound seems to be giving me a lot of static, so let me sort that out real quick.
Is my audio working?
Yes, Kevin, hello.
All right, thank you. It defaults to my telephone for some unknown IT reason.
Can anybody hear me?
I can.
Oh, good. I can hear you now. That's nice.
You go.
I don't think my sound bar is happy with me anymore. We're using the laptop sound today.
Danielle, is today the sweater contest?
Every day. It starts after Thanksgiving and goes every day. You should see my courtroom right now. I have the Grinch everywhere. Yes, I am the Grinch of Esmeralda County.
I like it.
Me too.
I don't see you in a Grinch role, though, I gotta tell you.
I love the Grinch. My clerk actually bought me Grinch Club Crocs. So I was
Wow.
wearing them all last week.
I can't say that I'm shocked that they actually make Grinch Crocs.
Yes, they're pretty awesome.
What do you think, Almeida? Does it look like we're close to quorum?
We just hit, so you can start whenever you're ready.
Okay. Then we will go ahead and call the meeting to order. And we will do a roll call.
Okay, thank you. Chief Justice Herndon,
Present.
Judge Armstrong,
Present.
Judge Birchie,
Here.
Judge Bishop,
Here.
Judge De La Garza, Judge Iding will not be here today, Evelyn Grosnick, Chris Hicks, Chief Judge Higgins,
I'm here.
Amy Hill.
Here.
Kayla, Judge Who? Judge Johnson?
Here.
Judge Jones? Nancy Lemke?
Here.
Alicia LaRude?
Here.
Gary Pruitt? Sorry, Garrett Pruitt.
Present.
Judge Ricks?
Here.
Judge Simons? Judge Soderquist?
I'm here.
Jacob Sommer,
Yes, I'm here.
Judge Toon,
Present.
Judge Walker, just signed on, Angelina Winky,
Present.
gotcha, and Steve Wolfson. Okay, we do have a quorum today. And so far, I'm going to read off the guests that I've seen so far. If I don't call your name here, please just let me know that you're in attendance. So I have Sabrina Schnur, Wendy Ware, Jessica Hickman, and Valerie Mead. Anybody I'm missing?
I'm Mei Yang from CGI.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? All right, all yours, Chief Justice. Oh, you're muted, sir.
Thank you. All right. Just real quickly, review and approval of our previous meeting summary. Did everybody have an opportunity to review that? And does anybody have any edits or corrections? See or hear nobody raising any objection. Can I get a motion to approve the September 23rd meeting minutes?
Motion to approve.
Thank you. A second?
I'll second.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
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 Anybody opposed? Okay, we will note for the record the approval of the previous meeting summary. Before we get to our discussion items, there's those things in life that you hear about, they're going to happen, people talk about them, but it just kind of sits out there. And that's kind of how I felt about Chief Judge Higgins' retirement. I kept hearing about it and I knew he was talking about it. But then I opened up my email the other day with Kevin's retirement letter. And it finally sank in, Kevin, that you are actually going to retire. So, look, I just wanted to, and I'll do it every time I have an opportunity publicly when you're there, to say thank you. You've been a tremendous asset to the bench for many, many years, not just in terms of Sparks Justice Court or the limited jurisdiction judges that you're involved in, but just overall, you've been a terrific representative, kind of one of those irreplaceable people. I know you mentioned that you already have your paperwork in place to be a senior judge. I'm hopeful that you'll continue on this committee, even after your retirement. You got a lot of wisdom and expertise. We don't meet that often. So I'm throwing that anchor towards you
I'll let you know what my hourly rate is.
and just ask you to think about it, right? I'm not going to put you on the spot and make you
I'll think
commit right
about it.
now. Just think about it, because I know everybody, A, would enjoy seeing you because you're an incredible human being, but also just to continue having you involved in this, okay?
All right. Well, thank you.
All right. Thank
And
you.
if a footnote I could add, if anybody's over 30 years in PERS, you need to look at PERS because actuarially they start taking money away from you. You start losing money because you stayed in the system too long. So at some point it's
So I've been in for 35 years, and my wife keeps telling me that I'm actually working right now harder than ever before for about 10 grand a year.
So yeah, your monthly check keeps going down the longer you work. So
Yeah, for sure.
all right. Well, thank you. That's very kind of you to say, Chief.
Absolutely.
I'll seriously think about being pressed back into service.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, let's go on to our discussion items. Number one, we have the CGL scope of work, and I believe Ms. Ware is going to be presenting today on behalf of Ms. O'Connor. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so why don't you go ahead? Thank you for being here today.
Sure, I appreciate it. And I send my apologies to my colleague, Caitlin, but we've sort of developed, we're a tag team. So hopefully I can step in pretty flawlessly for her. I'm not sure what you want in terms of a presentation. We had submitted our proposal for the revalidation of the instrument, and some questions came back to us. Our initial approach was assuming that Nevada would provide the rearrest and FTA information electronically, and we were asked to present different approaches for how we would collect that data. We have done that successfully in many other sites as well. And so what we put together were basically three options. An option with the court staff collecting the data, the Nevada court staff collecting the data and the costs associated with that. We provided another option, an individual we work with who already has CJIS access, has all of the background information to do it, would be on site collecting that needed rearrest data from your system. There would need to be some clearances. We would just have to make sure that individual would have those clearances. And then we've quoted the additional cost of us bringing in our person and doing it. And then the third option being that we could talk with the local police departments and gather that information as well. We've done that in the past. I will say that with that, Caitlin and or I would probably have some travel involved to meet on site when collecting the rearrest information that way from their systems. We find it is best to be in person. It helps build trust. It helps us understand the systems a little better and make it as flawless as possible. So again, we weren't sure, what the appetite was for either one of those. So we've sort of presented those three different options available. While Caitlin has not, I have actually worked on this instrument before in my career. I actually have a long research career in Nevada. I do the state forecast for the budget office. For both corrections and parole and probation. So I'm pretty familiar with the systems, and I think those are really the three methods that we thought would be best. Again, each one with a cost, and how that would pass on to the state.
Oh,
Yeah,
go
go
ahead.
ahead. No, I'm willing to take questions or take the discussion wherever you'd like it to go.
Well, under option three, I think there was a reference to hiring an experienced researcher as well. So, in addition to one of you talking about traveling, there would also, as I understood,
Correct.
kind of a the idea that you'd be hiring somebody similar to option two to assist with things.
Correct. And that would be at our level. They would be sort of under us to hire them and do that, but they would need to be on site because they would be filling out the collection instruments that we would design while going through the system and gaining that information.
Okay. And then I think your report also had an option four about data exchanges with law enforcement that seemed to be a little more cumbersome, but.
Correct. That's where Caitlin and I would need to go on site. We need to sort of build that trust, see what's available. There can be data use agreements with that. Secrecy is the wrong word, but confidential information, and getting that to be able to merge it. So that would really be option four. I sort of merged two and three together, hiring a local person or bringing in someone under us.
Okay. Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Ware?
Thank you.
Yeah, please go ahead,
Hi,
Angie.
my name's Angie. I'm from Pretrial Services, Second Judicial District Court in Washoe County. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
I had a question regarding page three of your updated proposal. It indicated that NCIC data, we do not recommend including NCIC data in the study. So I just wanted to clarify that we're using NCIC data for the rearrest information, but you don't want to use it in the study. Is that accurate?
We would use it to gain rearrest information. So I think that may have just been worded incorrectly, but we would be using that to collect the rearrest information.
And you indicated that you have experience matching data across systems. What other systems would you be using for this information?
So when talking about that, some jurisdictions have their own pretrial database system that does sort of linking. So we have experience with that. If there is a county with a pretrial, like small database that they built themselves that has information about the defendants and their outcomes, we have experience matching that to then what we create from a collection, if that makes sense.
Has anybody in your organization ever done the criminal justice information background check process? I'm curious mostly
Yes.
about the
Yes.
purpose code. Which purpose code exists? I'm sorry, purpose code. So I know that there is multiple purpose codes when accessing criminal justice information in NCIC, and I didn't know. I wasn't able to ask my terminal agency coordinator the correct purpose code, but if forgive me, Wendy, if you guys do this all the time and you're like, we're old hats at this and we've already had a purpose code for this. I just didn't know if that was relevant to getting that information in this way.
I've never run into it being a problem, but I don't know our purpose code off the top of my head, if that makes sense. I'm sure I could dig it up, but I don't, it's not registered as an issue. How's that?
I know we did this in the original validation washout. It was very hard to pull original data for the NPRA in 2016. And I couldn't remember what purpose code we used then. So forgive me. I'm not trying to derail everybody, but the criminal justice information in NCIC is how we use that is where my brain's at. So
Okay, I could dig it up what we've used in the past. I apologize, I don't know it off the top of my head.
did you have anything else, Angie? Nope. Okay.
Thank you. I think that that's all I have. I was just confused.
It's okay. All right. Anybody else have any questions for Ms. Ware? I don't see any, but I did have one other question, and that was on the potential use of CGI's Clark County revalidation study work, because that's kind of our largest, most populous area. If they're available to and willing to share that with you, does that impact our cost at all here, or would your budget be the same?
I really don't see that as a cost add. I mean, if they're willing to share the data, we can sort of incorporate those results. That's pretty easy. That's pretty easy to do.
Okay. All right. I do not see any other hands on my screen. Okay. All right, Ms. Ware, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Right, let's move on then to the presentation on behalf of CGI, and I believe Ms. Hickman was going to provide that. Yes. Hi. There you
So
go.
sorry, it took me a minute to get off mute.
No, that's okay. Thank you for being
Yes,
again.
absolutely. And just to kind of respond there, we are happy to provide results from the Clark County validation
Thank
for
you.
whoever ends up getting this. So that is not an issue at all on our end. We had three main follow-up questions from the meeting last time. The first was clarifying the jurisdictions and courts that we would include. I think there was just some miscommunication in our first scope. We are happy to include all the courts that are in the named jurisdictions. No problem there. We had a question about budget, which was how does the Clark County validation factor into our total budget for this
Right.
proposed scope? We actually did discount this a little bit, factoring in the Clark County validation, assuming that we were going to have those local results. However, we would still need to do the work of merging in the Clark County data with the other jurisdictions to get that quote unquote statewide look at how the tool is working.
Okay.
So that's where that factors into the budget for the total scope. The biggest question was around this rearrest data and how we would look at outcome data. We spoke to FTA and NCA, new active criminal activity in the revised scope, but we focused a little bit more on that rearrest data because we saw that that might be a little bit of a challenge. I'm actually going to turn it over to May to talk through a few options that we have for that.
Okay, thank you. Hi, May.
Hi, Josh Herndon.
Thanks for coming back.
Nice to meet you. I can talk a little bit about our approach to specifically the outcome new criminal activity during the pretrial period. So I wanted to start with that new arrest data can be difficult to obtain because different systems, different agencies of the system don't usually always talk to each other that smoothly from a data sharing standpoint. So we typically will start with pretrial supervision records. So these typically contain rearrest data But usually only for individuals who are under pretrial supervision. So we are going to be looking at the scope, and completeness of these records from pretrial to see, who they're tracking and how complete the data are. And we're going to be moving to local core and then jail records the next. So these are actually the most common and reliable sources for rearrest data. We typically use booking information to identify new arrests during the pretrial release period. So that would require connecting the risk assessment information to the court and jail records locally. In terms of law enforcement data, I know there were some discussions in a previous meeting about the feasibility of using law enforcement data as well. We're going to do our best to access law enforcement data to evaluate its usability. The usual challenge that we've seen in previous projects with other jurisdictions is that they sometimes don't share a common identifier between the law enforcement data and the pretrial slash core slash jail records. So sometimes that creates challenges in connecting with the records from law enforcement. And I understand we had some discussions last time about incorporating data from outside of the jurisdictions being validated. I remember there was a point, great point made about, especially for Clark County, Las Vegas, the population can be really transient, there are tourists there, so won't be able to assess like beyond the validated jurisdiction. For that, we will first start with neighboring jurisdictions of the jurisdictions that are participating in the validation study. We will going to be needing some support from participating jurisdictions to make the connections, but we will be responsible for obtaining the records and matching the records to the extent that the available common identifiers between different counties are available. There are some other options that we're going to explore if we want to include a new arrest data and FTA data from other jurisdictions. One option that was floated was Nevada statewide repository. We had some conversations with people who have had experiences working with the statewide repository, or like working with people who have worked with the statewide repository. It sounds like the individual level case information is not always available or accessible, especially to external researchers, and the data are rather incomplete. It is also not clear to us which identifiers are available for matching between the jurisdictions that are participating in the validation study. So it's just not clear like how reliable that we're going to be able to match to the statewide repository records. With that being said, we're still going to be reserving that as an option, but also wanted to be transparent with the information that we have gathered in the past several weeks about the statewide repository and how feasible that is. Think that's all I have. Jess, did I miss
Sorry,
anything?
I had myself muted that time. Ms. Hickman, was there anything else you wanted to add, or are you good?
Nope, but happy to answer questions.
Okay. Anybody in our group have any questions for Ms. Hickman or Ms. Yang?
I do, and I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Angie.
Angie with Pretrial Services again. I do for the statewide repository, are we talking about the NCIC data? Because that's fingerprint based. So if you have different identifiers, like if I go by my maiden name one day or my married name another day, it wouldn't be problematic for data purposes. But I'm concerned also about that's question number one, and I'll go to question number two next.
Giles, I saw you come off mute. I'm not sure if you want to comment first.
Go for it.
Sure. I wanted to clarify that when we were talking about Nevada statewide repository, we're not talking about NCIC data. We're talking about the statewide repository where only agencies that inside Nevada are reporting individual level criminal justice information to the state repository. We CJI, we currently have no access to that repository, but we have talked to people who have had experiences working with that. And the issue appears to be that the individual level data, which are going to be needed for the validation, are typically not accessible to external users. And they have personally also not seen the individual level records before. So it is really hard to assess at this moment, like how feasible that would be to connect the data with the local records for the jurisdictions that are participating in the validation study. And I think that, just and also it's not clear what identifiers are available. So one thing that we have noticed in the past with other jurisdictions, because not all jurisdictions have a unique identifier, which is, either a number or like a number letter combination that uniquely identifies a person. Using names to match people sometimes would be problematic because two people can have the same name, or there can be typos in the name that would eventually mess up the record. So ideally, like a unique identifier would be the most reliable way to connect the records together. So based on, the fact that we cannot access the system and really assess the data right now, and also we wanted to be transparent, about we can't promise, oh no, we're gonna do it, and then when actually looking at the data and found that matching will be difficult. So we want to be transparent based on the information that we have. And you let me know if that answers your question.
It does. But I guess my second question is about the use of rearrest, saying, identifying whether or not somebody's been rearrested without checking outside jurisdictions as like the clinical view, like the actuarial data view of it and the terms of rearrest for this project. Is it Can we say, that they haven't been rearrested if we haven't checked if they've been rearrested in other places? Because we are so transient. There's, as somebody who's been doing NPRAs for 10 years, I see California arrests all the time as people that we supervise in our and even ours in Washoe County. Amy, I'm sure it's much more in, in Vegas, but is it even how do you look at that from a the clinical perspective? Forgive me if that's inarticulate.
No, I think that's a great question, right? Because ideally, we would want to be, reliably connecting to all the rearrest records, regardless that's within the jurisdiction, within the state or like nationally. But I think end of the day, it's about, weighing between how much information we're adding to it versus whether this information is reliable, is going to be fair to all. The participants that are included in the study. So what I meant was because some of the challenges, connecting with the records, even with neighboring jurisdictions, I'm not sure how, easy or hard that would be. That is going to be an option that we will be exploring as well if, we eventually are selected to complete the statewide validation. But because some of the challenges with statewide repository and with NCIC, especially if it's based on names and fingerprints only. I think it's about how much information we're adding versus how reliable the information is. So we can add all the information that we have can possibly connect, but if the information is not entirely consistent, and also speaking of nationally, right? Because there are statute differences, there are regulation differences, there are different regulations around, when records get expunged, when records get entered. So there are a lot of inconsistencies there. Our point is just, weighing between like how much information we're bringing in versus does that risk the validity of that information? And will included information actually add enough reliable completeness to the study? Angie, I don't know if that, is a what you are, looking for, but that's how I look at it. Just, how reliable the information are versus how much we want to bring in, even if that's not reliable.
Thank you.
But that's a great question. Thanks,
Anybody
Angie.
else have any questions for Ms. Yang or Ms. Hickman? Chris?
Yeah, thank you. So it's kind of along the same lines, and I'm just curious. So, the policies are very clear on sharing or disseminating criminal history information outside of authorized entities. And, to me, the revalidation, what's most critical is rearrests. And I'm sure that is to just about everybody on here. We want to make sure we're releasing the right folks. So I guess my question is, how have you, in prior instances where you've done this kind of work, been recognized as an authorized entity that we that someone can disseminate criminal history information to? I mean, have you guys, because I pulled up the state's policy handbook and just kind of glanced at it today, and it's just very clear about secondary dissemination, and it says it has to be an authorized entity that which performs a function in the administration of criminal justice pursuant to statute or executive order. So in other jurisdictions, have you been able to access that information? Because I know law enforcement or like my office, we're allowed to run criminal histories, as are the courts. But we don't want to risk our licensing by giving it, disseminating it to someone that's not authorized. So if that's been allowed, can you just share that with all of us, please?
Yes, and we have done that for other states in the past. So I don't anticipate that being a challenge. However, we and the reason May is giving all of these caveats is that since we have not been authorized in this instance, we haven't seen the data yet. And so she's just going by her experience, giving you the possible issues that we might run into if we did get access and got to dive into these systems a little bit more deeply.
How do you get authorized? What steps do you have to?
Yeah, in the past, the states that I've worked with, they've had different steps to go through to access their statewide data and then to access their NCIC data, and it often requires getting fingerprinted, our data staff getting fingerprinted and going through their authorization process and sometimes doing a training to become an authorized entity.
Have you also been authorized for the FBI data before, the national criminal history data?
That was included in at least one statewide project that we have done. And Val, if you're still on here, I don't know if you know of others. I'm thinking specifically Michigan, we had to do that.
Sure, Valerie Mead. I don't know of others other than Michigan, but yeah.
Y'all good, Chris? Yep, thank you. Anybody else have any questions for Ms. Hickman, Ms. Yang, or now I will add Ms. Mead? Tough weekend for the Chiefs, Ms. Mead.
100%. I'm still sad.
Yeah, well, I'm a Cowboys fan, so every week is kind of sad. Any other questions? I do not hear or see any other hands. Okay, thank you all. I appreciate your time for coming back and, well, first off, for producing another report for us, but coming back and presenting and answering questions. All right, I believe as to our third presentation from Dr. Lanterman and USR, Dr. Lanterman was not available to be here today. But to the extent anybody has any questions for her about that report, she said she'd be happy to answer them if we want to forward any questions to her after our meeting is over. So I don't know if there was anybody that had any particular questions about Dr. Lanterman's report that they would have raised today. Yes, no? Okay. One question I do have, and this is for you all, Ms. Hickman, Ms. Yang, and Ms. Mead. One of the things that Dr. Lanterman talked about in her report was the issue that we talked about a little earlier about CJI sharing their data from the Clark County revalidation study. And she had indicated that, sure, if CJI is willing to do that, then sometimes it can offset costs a little bit for us, but it would be dependent upon whether or not you're collecting data along the same variables and in the same way as other entities do. So is that anything within your industry that's pretty standard, or are there specific things that you all share with other organizations that are kind of doing similar work about the metrics, I guess? And I'm probably using bad words, so I apologize. But I'm just trying to figure out if that is something that is only able to be ascertainable after you've done your study, or whether it's things that people can kind of figure out going into it. Does that make sense?
It does. And
Okay.
I'm going to turn it to Maya to answer this one because she is our data guru.
Sure. Thank you.
Yep, I think that's a great question. I think there is a, I wouldn't call it a standard, but roughly structured procedure in an industry to conduct a pre-trial risk assessment tool validation. So, in terms of the outcomes, right? Typically, we look at new criminal activity, fatal trip here for core, and sometimes, depending on the tool that are used, some jurisdictions also look at new violent criminal activity specifically. And of course, the tool itself would look a little bit different, but most often, the core risk factors going to be criminal history. So there is and there are also standardized analysis slash methodologies that are used in a validation study, including I'm going to be boring for a while. AllCrog,
Okay.
multivariate regression, and also testing interaction effects to test if the tool works consistently across different racial and ethnic and gender subgroups. So yes, there is a loosely structured procedure to
Okay.
complete a validation. And I think what differs a little bit eventually, it may be dependent on the completeness of the data, what are data available to us, what the data look like, because we have yet to receive data from Clark County. So we'll
Right.
have a better answer as to how consistent the data would be with our past experiences for risk assessment validation. But I think many of the information would be usable if a different vendor was selected
Okay.
for the statewide validation. Jess,
So,
Jeff,
I
why don't
mean,
you?
if Clark County provides you a bunch of data that's kind of a mess, you guys are going to have to clean it up in some fashion to make it usable and readable and interpretable, I would
Yes.
take it. Yeah. You hear that, De La Garza? Don't give them a bunch of messy data from Clark County. Thank you. But then that's what would be shared with other entities. It's not like Or would you share the raw data that you get from Clark County, or do you share what it is that you've kind of compiled and put together?
So I wanted to be careful with my language because CGI NUB doesn't own the data. We don't own the data, right? Like
Okay.
upon Clark County's approval, we will share the
Okay, got
data.
it.
I want to just clarify that point. We have a data sharing agreement that we're in the process of signing with Clark County. So what we would do is provide back to them the cleaned up data set along with
Okay.
outputs from the analyses, and it would be up to them what they did with it because at the end of the day, it is their data and they own it.
Okay, got
Herndon, we're not sharing anything with you.
it. Don't forget, I have to go back to the legislature in 47, Melissa. Thank you. Since our meeting's being recorded, that was joking between Brooke
Oh,
Dillon
all joking,
and
all joking.
But no, seriously, I don't think that would be a problem, would it, Mel, for
No,
to share raw
no.
data? And, okay.
Of course,
Okay.
of course, we absolutely would want to share our data because it's going to impact the data and the entire study for the state. So it would be ridiculous for us not to share that data.
Thank you. Okay. Anybody else have any questions right now? Yes, Angie.
Has the Las Vegas study, the NPR race for rearrest criminal history review, already been completed? And is that amount of the sample in Las Vegas the same as what it would be if we were moving forward as a state? The study in Las Vegas and Clark County has not been completed. In fact, it has not even been started. At this point, we are still going back and forth about the data sharing. As you all know, we had a huge statewide data breach, and therefore, Clark County and specifically Las Vegas Justice Court, in trying to look at what is going to be provided, has had to give that data sharing agreement to Clark County IT. And they have been going through it with a fine-tooth comb, making sure as to how data is going to be shared, exactly what's going to be shared, and how the process is going to work. So that has taken us a little bit longer than we anticipated. But I think it is due to the fact that they are being very cautious at this point as to who they're allowing into our systems.
Go ahead, Angie.
That's actually great because had the data already been extracted, we would have had to define things the same way. Like, do you count a failure to appear only failure to appears that wind up in NCIC, or do you count failure to appears like we're going to have to define your terms. So had that
Right.
already been done, it would have been a litany of other questions about whether or not that data was already would be a usable in a statewide context. So that's great in one sense. Also great for extra security because that was terrifying.
Do you have any idea, Mel, about when you're looking at maybe starting?
It really depends upon this data sharing agreement. I know that CJI just got some more questions from Clark County IT.
Okay.
So it really depends upon them answering those questions and whether IT feels like they're acceptable answers or whether they're going to come back. So I would hope within the next 30 to 60 days, but again, the process is taking much longer than we anticipated, which might be a good thing because,
Sure.
as Angie pointed out, maybe we need to really spend some of that time while we're waiting for some of these answers, sitting down and defining some of our terms, because that is going to make a difference, in the consistency and how usable that data is.
So let me ask you, Ms. Hickman, if I may. What's all the lawyer people? Get all the agreements figured out about data sharing and things of that nature. How quickly thereafter, generally, could CGI be able to start a project like this?
Yeah, that's the last hurdle on our end. So as soon as those data sharing agreements are signed, we start the transfer process and can begin immediately.
Okay. And by immediately, that's like within a week or 2 weeks, maybe.
Yep.
Okay. All right.
And just one quick note about the definition. Typically, we would go by the definition used for the risk assessment when looking at failures to appear or new criminal activity, whatever that might be. So that's a really good point to bring up now. If different jurisdictions use different jurisdiction definitions for failure to appear to complete the risk assessment, it is important to note that up front.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Anybody else?
Chief, I guess that is a good question. It was my understanding that the NPR is consistent across the state. So that would mean that the definitions are consistent across the state, correct? Or have there been changes to the NPR in the last 5 years, depending on the jurisdiction?
I don't believe, and anybody can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't believe there's been any changes in the last 5 years. That the tool that was created is the same tool that was to be used everywhere. I cannot speak to how each jurisdiction is feeding data into that for what Dr. Alston did originally. You're right, it is a very good question whether there was different definitions of things like an FTA, but I don't know the answer to that.
There was a manual put out, and the Supreme Court, the AOC worked very hard to make sure
Right.
that everybody had the same training for it. I only ask because NAPSA, National Association of Pretrial Services Agency, has updated their definition of FTA in some areas, and I am not using that definition here yet,
Right.
Judge De La Garza. To your point, we should be counting an FTA the way that that manual was, I think in 2016, I think we went through it. But I agree that the application statewide without constant chiropractic adjustments, there would be drift amongst, bailiffs that complete them versus various kinds of other training. So definitions will be a hurdle that we go through. But to your No official change for our purposes.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, all I can say on that question, Mel, is that I know we provided training after the tool was established. The training was geared towards obviously how to utilize the tool in the courts, but I believe that it was also, part of that was to consistently collect data to continue to be able to ascertain data that is similar across all the jurisdictions in terms of how it's being collected. Judge Schadequist had his hand up as well. Hi, Randall.
Oh, so I guess to answer or to try and answer your question, Mel, the NPRA is the same, but even here in Elko, how we've calculated certain things has changed. And so, to that degree, I think maybe the definitions definitely need to be addressed. When it comes to FTAs, that's been a particularly tricky one because do you count FTAs based upon when they fail to appear in court, because that's the idea. But there's no good way of really capturing that unless you're looking for FTA warrants. Now, when they get arrested on an FTA warrant, it shows up on their criminal history. So you can count that. And for a while, we were going back to the warrant history in the criminal repository so that we could see if there had been FTA warrants that were issued and when they were issued and entered into the system, and we would go off of that. And then after the data breach, I guess that functionality never came back. So we had to revert to now just going again off of their criminal history. So it's only going to show an FTA if they got arrested on their FTA warrant because you don't have a way to cross-reference the warrant that was entered to the specific arrest, usually without going into the case management system. And so I know that there have been a lot of issues with various things, but FTAs in particular, That's been really tricky because ideally you would just know when do they fail to appear in court, but there's no statewide way of calculating that.
Well, Amy, what about Vegas?
I actually was just pulling up our manual right now, reviewing it. But you are correct. The only way to really track an FTA is if they are a warrant and they are arrested on it. That's how we go through the system to check that. So I agree. I think it'd be good just to make sure we're all on the same page with this before we
And
actually do the.
would that be something, Ms. Hickman, that, prior to starting to collect data, let's assume that we're getting CGI for the whole thing, not just what you're doing down in Clark County. Is that something where you're getting together with all the people from the various jurisdictions and kind of establishing this is how we're going to define these terms? So we need you to collect data with that definition in mind.
Yeah, and actually, since we're looking at historical data that's already been collected, what we would do is sit down with each jurisdiction and say, how have you been scoring the assessment?
Okay.
And we would look at each jurisdiction locally. And then to do the statewide, what we would have to do is maybe go by the manual, right? What's the most consistent way that this assessment has been used? Because what we're trying to decide is the assessment as being scored accurate in reflecting actual failures to appear. So we'd have to know kind of what's been done to collect the data that's already in there.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay. Well, thank you again to all of our presenters today. I appreciate your time, and your work in producing the subsequent reports for us. It's been very helpful. So thank you all.
Thanks for inviting us back.
Thank you.
All right. And then let me ask, is are there folks on that have questions for Dr. Lanterman that they want to get answered before we have any fuller discussion about the three presentations and what we're going to do moving forward? Or was her scope of work supplement kind of answer enough things for folks to be able to move forward?
I would also be interested in her professional opinion as to whether or not we can say somebody's been rearrested if we don't check if they've been rearrested, but for local data on that. I know what the doctor was saying with respect to adding additional information makes it messier,
Right.
but I would be my NPRA scores are not going to match her NPRA scores because none of it's going to show other state data. And if we're asking for the tool, if we're asking to see if the tool is predictive on rearrests, but we're not catching rearrests because we're only checking statewide rearrests, I fear that we would be investing a lot of money into something that may not be producing the accuracy that $203,820 plus the $70,000 already down in Las Vegas, if I'm not sure that's a concern of mine that I think Dr. Lanterman may be able to provide her professional opinion to.
Okay. Well, is that a overall what we're doing, or is that a CGI specific concern, or what?
When asked, I asked CJI
Right.
Miss Yang her concern, and she said, I don't see the concern because I'm not sure that the information that we would be getting from the repository is valid because of the identifiers, which didn't make sense to me because the fingerprint data is the best way to cut out that common identifier problem. And Dr. Lanterman's cost and Dr. Lanterman's approach with the courts having to do their own criminal history thing, while it is a heavier lift for courts, it may produce the greater accuracy of the picture. And
Yeah.
it might also, I'm not trying to make argument. I'm just trying to understand for CJI, she didn't seem to have a problem with it. And as another professional in the field, I think I would like to have a PhD's opinion on whether or not rearrests get to be counted as rearrest unless we're checking.
Okay. So we can kind of work on putting that question, and maybe you can take a shot at typing something out as to exactly what we want to ask her. And then I'll have Almeida reach out to her and see if she could just, and it may just be by email, or if necessary, we can reset a meeting and invite her to come back in person since she wasn't available today. But I'm sure she'll have some thoughts on it. Look, it's a good question. She's going to have some a professional opinion for sure. Were there any questions that anybody else wanted to propose to Dr. Lenderman? No? Any thoughts anybody had about where we are right now with the three presentations? Open forum.
I guess one positive for me is somebody that's done this before. So it seems like CGI's done it before. So,
Right.
and we don't have to re-explain the entire criminal justice process to them, but if they're leaving those big holes in their data, that's a negative. So I don't know what experience the UNR Dr. Lenderman has with validating pretrial risk assessments. I'm just looking at it as a data. A data inquiry like any other data inquiry would be. A little expertise in what a preliminary hearing is or what a that would be helpful.
Anybody else? Anybody have any thoughts on whether any of the three are, yeah, I just really wouldn't want to do that one. So I'm just kind of looking at these two and I'm going to wait for Dr. Lanerman's response to Angie's question. I will personally tell you that I did feel that CGL was a little across the board, right? I couldn't quite pencil in what the issue there was. We got this option, we got another option that hires somebody, and another option that seems to hire kind of the same person, but they use a different term for them, but they're doing the same thing. And then the last option, which they didn't bring up, I brought up to them, seemed to need to hire somebody as well, but I really wasn't sure who that was. So that one was, I didn't have as much of a comfort level with that as I would with CGI or with Dr. Lanerman's proposal. And I don't know if anybody else shares those concerns or was fine with those or what.
I agree with that. It just seemed like either the court was going to have to collect all the data or they're going to hire two people at what, $65,000 a piece together, whatever. But then the last one, too, data exchange with local police departments could tell you that's not going to happen with Metro. So it just, yeah, it kind of was across the board and it just seemed like more money for not really explaining what they were going to use it with.
Yeah, I think to Kevin's point, they just seem to be not real experience in knowing what they would need to do to get these things in terms of data sharing agreements and whatnot, whereas CGI is kind of very knowledgeable about that, obviously.
I wonder, just based on the comments so far, is if that's what we do, is at least maybe eliminate CGL and just really start looking at and focusing on CGI or CJI and UNR, and then take it from there and get our questions answered about the rearrests and really dial into that issue because that seems to be the question that we're all having right now. And as Angie stated earlier, it might be a great point that we're at in Clark County in that we haven't really started. So maybe we can get that really dialed in, whether it be CJI or UNR that continues the research statewide, but
Right.
really get CJI dialed in for Clark County and maybe figure out some of the stumbling blocks while we're going through the Clark County process.
So, well, first off, let me just say, can I consider that a motion?
Yes.
Okay. Do we have a second on a motion to move off of CGL and just focus on CGI and UNR? I have a second from Judge Wolf.
Second.
Thank you. Okay, all those in favor of moving off of CGL and focusing on the other two, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay, that motion will pass, Almeida. So we're going to eliminate CGL from our consideration and just focus on the other two. One thing that I had thought of, and I meant to ask Ms. Hickman, and I just forgot about it, and it may be in the report somewhere, and I'm just spacing it right now, but I know that CGI said that they would share their data, and Dr. Lanterman referenced, hey, if they'll share their data and all the variables meet up, that's great, and that might reduce a little staffing cost. But what would the cost be for CGI to share their data? Do we know?
My understanding was that
No.
they give all of that data and all of that information to Clark County as part of the process.
Right.
And then,
But do you think Clark County is just going to say to everybody else, here, you can have all this data that we've paid for without anybody else remunerating Clark County at all for that?
I guess that would be a question that I would need to
Yeah,
ask.
can you reach out and ask that? Just I mean, it would be great if Clark County is saying, yeah, we're all public entities, we're going to pay for this. Or is Clark County going to say, yeah, that's great, but we would want the state to kick in some of that money if they want to utilize that data as well? Because
Well,
that's going to affect whether Dr. Lanterman is at 111 or whether Dr. Lanterman, not Dr. Lanterman herself, but our overall cost is rising up closer to what the CGI cost is anyway.
I think we should be clear, number one, that Clark County itself is not paying for this revalidation. This is coming out of funds from the MacArthur grant.
But the data is going to Clark County, yes?
Yes,
Okay.
yes.
And so theoretically, whoever's paying for it, Clark County owns the data, both CGI's report and cleaning up of all that and the raw data. So data, whatever we want to call it.
Sure.
So they're the ones that get to tell us whether they're going to give it to other entities to use in some fashion. And I just am kind of trying to be proactive in figuring out whether that's going to come at any cost to this commission or whether they're going to do us a solid and just give it to us because it's already been paid for. So I just, yeah, if you can just get an answer to that, which I don't know if that's going to involve a bunch of, okay, now we need all these data sharing agreements with other entities that we
Right.
want our people to
Right.
go through in terms of cybersecurity issues and everything else. But that might be something that could affect whatever our decision is as well. I mean, I kind of lean towards, look, we got CGI involved in our largest jurisdiction right now. It would seem to make sure if we can get our questions answered, that having them involved doing the whole thing would maybe be more efficient and expedite things. On the other hand, I think Dr. Landerman's proposal is very well taken, and I like having UNR involved with it. And I like the idea of being able to share data and hopefully cut down some of our costs if possible. But yeah. Angie, did you have your hand up again?
Yeah, but I feel rude keeping it up while you're talking. So I
No,
keep putting it
it's
back down and then putting it back up because
no, man,
I.
that's just, hey, look, that's the, that's the year we're in, right?
The
That's,
curse of Zoom and
don't worry about it.
caffeine. So here's the thing. I also want to, with leave of this, body, I want to ask my terminal agency coordinator if she could talk to, our audit or with the FBI and the state, because I believe Mr. Hicks questions, because we're talking about, hey, would Las Vegas be cool to just pass over that data? All joking aside, I'm curious what the secondary dissemination for that looks like. Would the data need to be scrubbed such that no personal identifying information is in there, right?
Right.
So you just have a random number associated with a defendant. It's not a person. It doesn't matter. Like, I want to figure out a way if we are asking them if they could do that, Judge De La Garza, is there a way that we should be asking for that information to us such that it's not a secondary dissemination issue, right? If there's no DOB name or Social Security number, is it CJI still? It's still CJI. I hope somebody can rescue me from my babbling. Goodbye.
Is
No,
it
no, no, no.
prohibited by
You're
the
good. That's
FBI
true.
to be secondarily disseminated?
Yeah, I mean it's a very good question. So Mel, maybe you're asking, is there going to be any cost to us to get it? And are there limitations or restrictions on how it would be provided, such that is it going to be usable to us in the ways that we need it to be, or is it going to be somewhat scrubbed and redacted in ways that might make it, not really effective for what we need it for?
I agree 100% with DA Hicks about secondary dissemination, but there's got to
Yeah.
be a way to do study. I mean, back when Department of Justice actually did studies, that there's got to be a way to use this data for studies. Why do we accumulate data if we can't do anything with
Right.
it?
Right.
Right.
So scrubbing it maybe is the answer, but yeah.
Okay. All right, so Mel, you'll work on those questions. Angie, you'll work on putting together the follow-up for Dr. Lanterman to answer. And she can just provide that back to us, Almeida, when you talk to her, just maybe a supplemental supplement, or just type something out for us. And then we can set another meeting to hopefully get together and kind of finalize the direction we're going to take with which of these entities that we want to engage with.
Fantastic. Okay. I have to jump off. I'll thank you very
Yeah,
much.
that's it. I've used an hour of everybody's time, which is where I try and keep it. So I appreciate it, everybody. Thank you so much. If I
You.
don't see you before the holidays, enjoy the holiday season. And we'll get together again soon.
Thank
Okay.
you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye. Good, everyone.